This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
That's good.
Perfect. Court is open. You may be seated.
22-117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed. Can I, counsel, identify?
Adam Lally for the Commonwealth. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Lally.
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura McLaughlin for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Ms. McLaughlin.
Good morning, Your Honor. Alan Jackson for Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elizabeth Little, also for Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Little.
And good morning, David Yannetti for Karen Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Yannetti. Good morning, Ms. Reed. All right, counsel wanted to see me?
I did, Your Honor. Judge, as I indicated in an email that I sent to your clerk last night and copied to Commonwealth.
I have not seen the email.
Okay, well, I'll explain what was in it. Essentially, I was alerting the court that I would like to be heard prior to the start of testimony today, because since Katie McLaughlin testified on Thursday and Friday, we received a deluge of photographs that put her with Caitlin Albert on many different occasions after they graduated high school. We received information from their high school yearbook that they were more than just acquaintances in high school. They were teammates on the track team. And even after I sent that email with the photographs that I attached to it, late last night, we received another photo where Katie McLaughlin and Caitlin Albert are standing next to each other in a photo at a baby shower in June of 2021, about 8 months before John O'Keefe's death. It's very clear to us that Katie McLaughlin perjured herself. And I wanted to discuss the issue of the admissibility of not only the photographs that we're now providing that we just received over the weekend, but I also want to resurrect the admissibility of H, I, J, and K for identification. And I think a discussion of this, Your Honor, needs to start with what court orders are currently in place. The leading case with regard to the provision of reciprocal discovery when the defense is offered.
Oh, so you want to get back to Rule 14, the Rule 14 issue?
It is a Rule 14 issue.
Okay.
That's supplemented by.
Hold on 1 second. So on top of that, we can discuss this later. I'd like to get the trial started.
That's fine, Your Honor. My strong belief is that we need to determine this today. And the reason is that Caitlin Albert is coming up as a witness for the Commonwealth. She faces the same areas of cross-examination that Katie McLaughlin faced, and these photos are relevant to her cross-examination.
Okay. All right. So aside from the Rule 14 issue, I also think this is cumulative. I don't have the email. I do have the photos, but we can address this. When do you expect Albert? I'm sorry. What's her name?
Caitlin Albert.
Caitlin Albert.
I'd say midweek. Probably. It depends on how far we get today.
So we'll address this either today or tomorrow.
Thank you.
Scheduling purposes. So Sergeant Link, is he testifying today?
Yes, Ron.
All right. So we need a voir dire of him. I expect that might take a while. is he testifying this morning, or can we use the lunch break for that? I need to know if it's around 11 o'clock, we'll have a voir dire. I'll just order coffee. I just need to know about that.
So I anticipate two witnesses prior to him. So I can't predict necessarily how long.
How long will you be with those two witnesses?
With those two witnesses, probably half hour, maybe a little more with each.
Okay. Any idea how long the cross will be with those witnesses?
Probably. I will handle one of those witnesses. Mr. Giannetti will handle the other. And I would say at least a half an hour on cross-examination, maybe a little bit more.
Okay. Would it be up to an hour on each? I'm just, again, scheduling. I'm not limiting you at all. I'm just curious.
Thank you. I don't think we could exceed an hour. I would say safely, I know that's it's a big range, but between a half an hour and an hour, I think, for each of them.
Okay.
I think that's probably accurate.
All right. Well, can I see you for a second? All right. Thank you. So we will all set to bring the jurors in?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Jim.
Maybe.
What do you mean? We also have exhibit book 8.
8.
Thank you.
Have any business before the Honorable Beverly Cannoni, Justice of the Norfolk Superior Court, and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is now open. You may be seated.
Good morning again, counsel. Good morning again, Ms. Reed.
Good morning, juror. I have to ask you those same three questions, and I appreciate your patience. We had to work out a few things this morning. So, was everyone able to follow the instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone?
Yes.
Everyone said yes and nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you if you were able to refrain from seeing or reading or hearing anything about this case since we left the other day. So I read that. I'm going to see counsel at sidebar and.
Be mindful of the step up.
Morning.
Morning.
You solemnly swear the evidence you give the court and jury in the case now and here and should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lally, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please state your name and spell your last name?
Yes, my name is Paul Gallagher, last name G-A-L-L-A-G-H-E-R.
And how are you employed, sir?
I'm a lieutenant with the Canton Police Department.
And how long in total have you been a member of the Canton Police Department?
A total of 32 years, 2 years as a permanent intermittent officer, 30 years full-time.
And you indicated that you are a lieutenant, is that correct?
That is correct.
And how long have you held the rank of lieutenant?
I was promoted to lieutenant August 1st of 2021.
What did you do with Canton Police prior to becoming a lieutenant?
I was the detective sergeant from 2018 until I was promoted in 2021.
And what is it, just starting with that, what is it that a detective sergeant does?
So when a patrolman takes an initial report, anything that needs follow-up, the detective sergeant makes sure it's assigned to a detective, usually the next detective working, and make sure that all the steps are taken to manage the cases, to bring it to fruition, if possible.
And what is it, sort of, what are your general duties and responsibilities as a lieutenant with Canton Police?
Currently, I am in charge of internal affairs, background checks, patrol, and I oversee detectives.
You say currently, what was it prior?
I was promoted in 2021. At that time, Lieutenant Kelleher was the lieutenant in charge of detectives. We have since had a change of police and our assignments have changed.
Now, were you working with Canton Police on the morning of January 29th, 2022?
I was.
And at some point, did you receive a phone call?
I did.
And about what time was that and who called?
That was shortly after 6 a.m. It was Sergeant Sean Good.
And he's a member of your department as well?
He is. He's the 12 to 8 supervisor, which our shifts actually run 11:45 p.m. to 7:45 a.m., but we call it the 12 to 8 shift.
And what, if anything, was indicated to you in this call from Sergeant Good?
Sergeant Good told me he was responding to a scene where a party was found unconscious, possibly not breathing in the snow. He stated his name was John O'Keefe. He was a Boston police officer who resided on Meadows Ave. He further told me that he had gotten a call earlier about John O'Keefe not returning home that night. His friends had called the hospitals, then they called the police, then they went out and looked for him, and they found him unconscious and not breathing in the snow.
And based on that information, what, if anything, did you...
I told him I would respond.
Where were you initially responding?
I was initially responding to Meadows Ave. I misinterpreted when he said he was a Boston police officer on Meadows Ave. I thought they discovered him on Meadows Ave.
But subsequently, did you learn a different location and respond to that location?
I did.
What was that location that you subsequently determined was where you were going?
When I called the dispatch to find out the exact address, I was told it was 32 Fairview Road.
And that was from the dispatch, is that correct?
That's correct. It was Officer Dever who answered the phone.
That would be Officer Kelly Dever, is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, did you go straight from home to the scene, or did you go stop somewhere else prior to?
I stopped at Canton Police Department prior to that.
And what was the purpose of stopping at Canton Police Department prior to going to Fairview?
I was picking up some winter gear, and I advised Sergeant Good via the radio that all midnight personnel was to be held till further notice.
And you say winter gear, as far as you're responding to a scene, what, if any, other sort of equipment did you procure when you went to Canton Police?
It was clothing. I needed a winter jacket, hat, things of that nature. I was responding in my personal vehicle.
And if you know, about what time was it that you arrived on Fairview Road that morning?
I arrived shortly after 7 a.m.
And when you arrived, what, if anything, was it that you observed upon your arrival?
There were some vehicles pulling away, but parked by the where the scene was were three Canton police vehicles and one black Toyota pickup truck that is assigned to our detectives.
And who, if anyone else from your department, was there at that time?
When I arrived, the three marked units were occupied by Officer Mullaney, Officer Sarif, Sergeant Good, and the Toyota pickup was driven there by Detective Sergeant Lank.
And as far as by the time you arrived, Mr. O'Keefe is no longer on scene, is that correct?
That is correct.
And what, if any, vehicles or apparatus or any personnel from the fire department were on scene by the time that you arrived?
None.
Now, when you first arrived, who, if anyone, did you first sort of speak with on scene?
I first encountered Sergeant Good.
And you had a conversation with him, is that correct?
That is correct.
And who, if anyone else, did you talk to now?
Detective Sergeant Lank joined us as well.
And following these initial conversations with Sergeant Good and Detective Sergeant Lank, what did you do with that?
Once they updated me on the case, we decided that we had to process where Mr. O'Keefe was found. It was snowing heavily. Sometimes the wind was blowing north. Sometimes it was south. It was changing directions. And we discussed how to process where Mr. O'Keefe was found, because at the time we had no idea how he came to be where he was.
And with respect to that, first, as far as where Mr. O'Keefe was, who, if anyone, directed you to where Mr. O'Keefe had been prior to your arrival?
When I arrived and I spoke with Sergeant Good and Detective Sergeant Lank, they updated me on the case. They had told me that Mr. O'Keefe was transported to the hospital, that they were doing CPR on him at that time. They told me that he was bleeding from the mouth and nose, and that he may have had swelling above one of his eyes. Told me that they transported his girlfriend as well, and they told me the circumstances surrounding that incident. They told me that at some point after the phone call to the police station, friends, the woman's name was Kerry Roberts, picked up Ms. McCabe and John O'Keefe's girlfriend, Karen Reed, and they drove around and they discovered Mr. O'Keefe on the left side of the property. I would call it the east side of the property, unconscious and not breathing in the snow.
Now, this area that Sergeant Good directed you to where he indicated Mr. O'Keefe was, you mentioned that it was snowing heavily at this time. Is that correct?
It is correct, yes.
And about how much snow was on the ground in this area at the time that you initially went over?
I would say at least 4 inches of snow.
Now, with reference to, as far as you mentioned, sort of processing, what, if anything, did you and the other officers do with regard to that scene as far as that was concerned?
So it was a unique scene because of the weather. Sergeant Lank had notified Norfolk County CPAC. He had advised them that...
Objection.
Sustained.
I'm sorry, can you rephrase the question, please?
So Detective Sergeant Lank had reached out to Norfolk County CPAC, correct?
That is correct.
And what is CPAC?
It's the State Police Investigative Unit of the District Attorney's Office, Crime Prevention and Control.
And what, if any, as far as that notification is concerned, what is sort of a protocol when you have an unintended death?
So when we have an unintended death, the Norfolk County CPAC unit responds and takes jurisdiction. In this particular case, Mr. O'Keefe was still alive, so they declined to respond at that time.
There may be a term that's pretty well understood, but when you say unattended death, what do you mean by that?
An unexplained death, a person who was alone at the time of their death.
And so at this point, no one from the State Police had responded or was responding to the scene at that point?
That is correct.
And so what, if anything, did you and the other officers do with regard to the scene where Mr. O'Keefe had been located in the snow?
So we decided on how we were going to process the area. Our concern was there were some light pink spots in the snow, and we thought it may be blood. So we were discussing how to get to that, uncover the blood safely. We decided we were going to process the scene with a leaf blower. I figured we could direct the snow off the area in a controlled fashion. At that time, Sergeant Good volunteered to go get a snowblower. But what I told him in the meantime, I wanted to photograph the area. I wanted all the cruisers away from the house. There was one cruiser, I believe, occupied Officer Saraf directly in front of where Mr. O'Keefe was. I wanted him backed up. And there was crime scene tape set up, and it was blowing wildly in the wind. It was serving no purpose at that time. There were no civilians or witnesses about. And I knew we had two officers who could protect the scene while we processed it. So Sergeant Good, before he left to get the leaf blower, he directed the officers to move their cruisers. I told Sergeant Lank the most important thing he could do at this time would...
Objection.
The objection sustained. Move on to your next question, Mr. Lally.
Now, you mentioned that there was some crime scene tape that was set up around. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And how was that sort of, how was that accomplished?
Sergeant Good and my Detective Sergeant Lank put out the crime scene tape.
Do you know what, if anything, they were able to use to attach it to in order to set it up around where Mr. O'Keefe had been found?
I believe they used a fire hydrant, a tree, a flagpole, and I'm not sure what else. I don't recall specifically what it was attached to.
And with regard, you mentioned there were photographs that were taken prior to the implementation of a leaf blower. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I can just ask a little bit about that. As far as the leaf blower was concerned, why was that a decision as far as that being an implement to use in this particular scene?
It was a unique scene. There was snow. I had never processed a scene in the snow. I had seen a leaf blower used in the snow, and it's quite effective at being controlled. So that's why it was readily accessible. The scene was debilitating as we were on scene with the weather. Snow was piling up, and I thought that was the best method at that time.
And prior to the arrival of Sergeant Good back to the scene with the leaf blower, what, if anything, else was done to sort of document the scene at that time?
In addition to photographs, what we did was, I wasn't sure how the roadway ended. I wasn't sure if there was a sidewalk, a curb, a berm, or whether it was just grass. So Sergeant Lank and I dug out what I believe is called a 6-inch Cape Cod asphalt berm, exposed it so we could get a better perspective of how far Mr. O'Keefe might have been in, off the roadway.
May I approach the witness?
Yes.
So I'm going to direct your attention. Direct your attention to what's commonly marked as Exhibit 7, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16, 17, 19, 20, 1, 22, and 23. Please review those yourself and look up on your screen.
Okay.
Your Honor, may we approach this briefly?
Sure.
Mr. Lally, hold on for a sec.
No, I'll see counsel again at sidebar on this issue.
I thought the witness just retreated.
Yes. Jurors, I had told you before how important it is that our record is clear, and that's why I'm sort of making this take longer than it would otherwise. So, Mr. Lally, can you simply hand her a note telling her what numbers?
Yes, Your Honor, just writing the numbers.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I would ask that the next 13 exhibits be marked. The next 13 photographs in the book be marked as the next 13 exhibits.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, no, Texas.
It's 21 through 32.
Thank you. All right, you can publish them, Mr. Lally.
Thank you. May I return them to the witness as well?
Yes.
Madam Court, for the press, you have it on. Thank you, Madam.
I know it's you.
Thank you.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have the first of those photographs up on the screen. If you could enlarge that just a bit more. And Lieutenant, I don't believe that's the first photograph for you, but if you could locate that within the...
Sure. I believe that's Exhibit 30.
If you could just describe to the jury what if anything, we're looking at in this.
So that is in front of 34 Fairview Road in Canton. It's looking westerly or the direction towards Chapman Street, and it's documenting the conditions at the time.
May I approach the witness, John?
Yes.
Mr. Lieutenant, at any point, if I'm asked, this is a later point.
Yes.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have the next photograph, please.
That is simply documenting that the number 34 is on the mailbox. That is 34 Fairview Road.
Do you have a number on that in front of you?
Yes, I do. It's Exhibit 22.
Thank you.
There are two of these, I believe, or similar. I just want to make sure I have the correct one. 22. That would be 22, yes.
And what's depicted in that photograph, sir, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of sort of the scene in the roadway when you arrived that morning?
It is. It's the mailbox with the number 34 on it, and it shows two vehicles in the driveway of 34 Fairview Road.
And Ms. Gilman, the next photograph. If you could, Lieutenant, when you locate, just indicate which exhibit we're looking at in this one.
That's Exhibit 28. It's a different angle of the driveway showing the third car in the driveway. I wanted to document what was in the driveway at that time.
Thank you, sir. Next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
It's Exhibit 29, and basically it documents the same thing. The entirety of the house from a westerly view, and the three cars that were in the driveway at the time I arrived.
And the next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
I believe that's Exhibit 31, and it's a close-up of where Mr. O'Keefe was found, and you can see the very light pink spotting that we thought may be blood, and there was an object in the center as well, which we didn't know what it was at that time.
Subsequent, did you learn what that object was?
Yes.
What did you learn?
It was a broken clear cocktail glass. and the pink spot was frozen or coagulated blood.
And the next photograph is coming.
That's exhibit 23. And it's basically showing that the scene was trampled by rescue workers, witnesses, et cetera, but you could still see, you know, the pink spotting in the area where Mr. O'Keefe was.
As far as footprints within the snow that you observed, you indicated that the scene was trampled or walked over by first responders, correct?
Correct.
And the footprint that you observed, what footprints have you, so what areas around where Mr. O'Keefe's, where it was indicated to you that Mr. O'Keefe's body was, where those footprints located?
They were located between the street and where Mr. O'Keefe was found.
And as far as between where Mr. O'Keefe was found and the house or the residence at 34 Fairview, what, if any, footprints did you observe in that area?
I didn't observe any footprints at that time.
Ms. Gilman, if I could ask for the next photograph, please.
That is exhibit 24, and it's showing a westerly shot of the scene. Mr. O'Keefe was found in this area here, and it depicts the wind blowing in that direction at the time.
And probably pretty self-evident, but it depicts the wind blowing in that direction based on what?
The flag flying.
The next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
That is exhibit 20. That is the I believe it's called a 6-inch Cape Cod asphalt berm that separated the roadway from the property of 34 Fairview. And this is the long look to where Mr. O'Keefe was discovered.
The next photograph is coming.
Again, that's a close-up of one of the exhibits we saw earlier. Again, you can see the spotting and the glass here. This is, I believe this is exhibit 26.
So, next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
This is exhibit 27, and it's some what we believed was frozen or coagulated blood spotting.
Next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
And that's a different view, close up of the scene, and that's exhibit 32.
And the next photograph, Ms. Gilman.
That's when we first uncovered the berm, the 6-inch berm. And it's just a smaller picture, close-up of that berm. It's exhibit 25.
Reference to the sort of uncovering of the berm as you've described it, what, if anything, did you use to uncover the berm?
I believe we just used our foot to uncover that.
And what I believe is the last photograph.
This is the location from the berm to where Mr. O'Keefe was found. It's just a long view, and it's exhibit 21.
May I approach you on this?
Yes. Yes. Tori.
Thank you.
As far as the cruisers with the Canton Police Department, what, if any, sort of recording equipment are they equipped with?
They're with dash cameras, watch guide cameras.
And what, if anything, have you done to review some of that dash camera footage from the cruisers, from that level?
I've reviewed all of it.
And specifically, have you reviewed dash camera footage from the 683 cruiser, Officer Sarah's cruiser?
Yes, I did.
And Governor, if I may, I would ask that it's already been marked as Exhibit 12. I would ask that a portion of that be played for the jury at this time.
Okay.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could fast forward this to approximately 57 minutes or so into the.
That's the video I referred of Canton Cruiser 683 on, it's dated January 29th, 2022 at 7, if the time is correct, 7:02:54.
And around this time within this video of from Officer Sarah's cruiser, what, if anything, did you observe occurring within that cruiser camera?
I believe it's at approximately 57:17. You'll see Sergeant Good begin to mark out the scene with yellow crime scene tape. You'll see him in front of the cruiser at first. Him, Officer Mullaney, and Sergeant Lank walk off, and then you'll see Sergeant Good stretching out the crime scene tape.
And if you could, sir, as the video is playing, using the laser pointer that you have before you, just draw the jury's attention to who, if anyone, you observe or recognize within that video.
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if you could.
The yellow tape, it is. There's two officers with yellow crime scene tape. I believe this is Officer Mullaney, but I'm not sure. I know this is Sergeant Good.
My apologies, Ms. Gilman, if you could play again.
That's Detective Sergeant Lank in the lighter coat. Sergeant Good and Lank, they walk off camera. You'll see Sergeant Good come into the picture right here. They're stretching out the crime scene tape. You can see it flapping in the wind there. See it raise way up because of the wind. This is the crime scene tape here. And I'm not sure what they affixed it to, whether it was the cruiser at that point or not. But you can see the crime scene tape going across the scene that way.
Ms. Gilman, if you could pause it right there for a moment. So, Lieutenant Gallagher,
In addition to sort of the crime scene tape that you observed in this video, what, if anything else, did you get from the station to attempt to sort of secure the scene or place at the scene?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Did you get a tent at the station?
Excuse me?
A tent at the station?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
And why not?
I had a tent with me from home. It was a personal 8x8 tent at that time.
My apologies. And so at any point in time on the scene, were you able to set up that tent that you retrieved from your home?
Due to the weather conditions, we did not set it up because it would have required officers holding it down, and we didn't think the top would stay on.
And again, maybe pretty self-evident, but when you say due to the weather conditions, what, if anything, about the weather conditions prevented you from setting that tent up over the scene?
There was high winds, shifting directions, a large amount of snow falling.
Now, Ms. Gilman, if I could ask, if you could just pull forward in that video to about the 1 hour, 7 minute mark. Again, if you could hit play on that. Lieutenant, what, if anything, are we looking at in this portion?
If you look closely, it's the crime scene tape that's blowing around. Right now, you can't see it. Or I cannot see it from here.
Is this around the point where the decision was made to take that down? Is that correct?
It was later on. I observed the same thing, and I told the officers it wasn't doing any good at that time. And there were nobody to keep out of the scene at that point. It was only police personnel on scene.
Thank you, sir. I'm just coming. You can stop and take it down. Thank you very much. Now, with reference to the implementation of the leaf blower, was that memorialized in any way as well?
Yes, I had Sergeant Good take a video since we were improvising using something I wasn't familiar with being used before in case there were any questions on how it was deployed. I had Sergeant Good take a short video.
And there's sort of several different short video clips of that process. Is that fair to say?
There's at least one that I know of.
May I approach?
Yes.
Showing you with this, you recognize that.
I don't recognize it. I haven't seen this disc before.
May we approach?
Okay. 220s. Thank you.
My deepest apologies, Your Honor. May we approach this briefly?
Okay. Jurors, feel free to stay.
Your Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish what's now been marked as Exhibit 30?
20A.
The last exhibit is this. If I can publish that to the jury.
Yes.
Anyway, this is 1-3. I'm sorry, Ms. Coleman, if you could just pause it right there. And Lieutenant Gallagher, do you recognize what's up on the screen?
I do.
And what do you recognize?
It's me operating the leaf blower and at the scene where John O'Keefe was discovered.
And who is operating the leaf blower in these videos?
I am.
And who, if anyone else from your department, is sort of present while this process is going?
Detective Sergeant Lank is documenting, and Sergeant Good is also assisting.
And Ms. Gilman, thank you very much. If you could just play and run.
You see, it's it removes the snow. I was removing the snow layer by layer. And right here, you can see it exposing the cocktail glass. You're going to see red spots appear as I remove it layer by layer. These pink spots start to turn to be dark red spots. As you see, we can control it. We were concerned with whatever other...
Oh, hold on and wait for a question.
As you can see, it just takes it layer by layer.
Hold on for a second. Mr. Lally, Ms. Gilman, can you pause it? So if you have a question for the lieutenant, all right, you're asking him to narrate the whole thing. We're not going to do it that way. And you can pause and then question. It's great you're keeping your voice up over the sound of the leaf blower, but it's a little distracting.
I understand, y'all.
So do you have a question, Mr. Lally?
Just briefly at this point. So Lieutenant Gallagher, with respect to as you're conducting this sort of process, what, if anything, are you concerned about as far as throughout this process of trying to locate evidence?
Were we concerned with the weather destroying biological evidence at that time?
So what, if anything, were you doing with the garden?
We were trying to take the snow that had fallen over the blood, and we were trying to remove it to expose the blood.
And fair to say, as far as during this sort of removal process, how much of the snow were you able to sort of sift layer by layer with the leaf blower that you had?
We could control how much I wanted to sift. I did it as I started out as gently as possible, and if it needed more snow needed to be removed, I got a little more aggressive.
Thanks. Ms. Gilman, if you could hit play. And the next video, man. Gentlemen, if you could play the third video, please.
Thank you.
Ms. Gilman, if you could play the last video, please. Mr. Officer, you can put the lights on. Thanks. Lieutenant, with reference to that process, how far deep into the snow were you able to go with using that leaf blower in that manner?
We get almost to the ground, bare ground.
And as far as sort of a surface area, like how much of that area where Mr. O'Keefe was found were you able to use the leaf blower on?
It was approximately a 6x6, 7x7 type area.
And from that area, what, if anything, in addition to the cocktail glass pieces that you already testified to and the red spots on the ground, what, if anything, else did you observe?
Yeah, we didn't observe anything at that point. Anything else, just the blood in the glass.
Now, Lieutenant, during the time that you were on scene, with reference to the neighborhood in general, how many people did you observe sort of come out of their house at any point in time that you were there?
I didn't observe anybody ever come out of their house.
And that includes the residents that you were in front of as well as any other residences along that street, is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, at some point, about how long a period of time, if you know, were you on scene that particular morning?
Approximately 50 minutes, 45 to 50 minutes.
And following that, where did you go?
We brought the exhibits back to Canton Police Headquarters.
And by that, you mean the glass and what you had collected of the blood?
Yep, we took 6 blood samples, yes.
Okay, and how were you able to sort of collect the blood samples on scene?
Well, the blood samples, because they were frozen, we debated on how to collect it. We didn't think swabbing was going to be easy to do if it was frozen. So we decided on finding some type of temporary plastic evidence container. We were able to find large cups, and we took 6 samples. We bagged the 6 samples, and Sergeant Lank transported them back to Canton Police Headquarters.
And with respect to those samples and piece of glass that you located, eventually, what, if anything, was done with those? Well, first and foremost, when you came back to Canton Police Station, what, if anything, did you do with the message?
Chief Berkowitz was at headquarters, and we had a meeting in the detective sergeant's office.
What I'm asking, sir, is with reference to those items that you took back from Fairview, when you got back to the station, what, if anything, did you do?
Sergeant Lank placed them into evidence.
And then subsequent to Sergeant Lane placing them in evidence at some point, where did they go?
They were turned over on February 1st to the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab.
And was that something where they were driven to the crime lab, or did the crime lab come to the station?
The crime lab was already at the station.
Now, you go back to the police station and have some conversation with your chief, is that correct?
That is correct.
And what was your chief's name?
Chief Berkowitz, Kenneth Berkowitz.
And following that conversation, at some point, did you return to Fairview Road that morning?
I did.
And who, if anyone, did you go there with?
I accompanied Detective Sergeant Lank.
And when you arrived, where did you go with reference to residents?
We went into a side door. And there were people in the kitchen at that time. I believe it was the kitchen area.
And did you know any of the people that were in the kitchen?
I did.
Who, if anyone, did you know?
Who I remember specifically was Jim McCabe, who I don't know personally, but I know because that's who Sergeant Lank arrived to talk to. And I knew Brian Albert in a professional sense.
And so Brian Albert is also a police officer, is that correct?
He was Boston police officer, yes.
Now, as far as any other people, who, if anyone else, were you introduced to when you came into the kitchen area? And all?
I wasn't introduced to anybody. All I know is there were five or six people there.
And are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Brian Higgins?
I am.
And how are you familiar with him?
He is an ATF agent who I've worked with when I was assigned to DEA, and he later had a satellite office at our PD, and I have since come to know him personally.
And in reference to your work with the DEA, how long did you work with the
DEA? 13 years.
And so, Mr. Higgins, was he present in the home on Fairview when you arrived there that morning?
I don't recall him. When I arrived originally, definitely not. I don't recall if he was there when we arrived about 9 a.m.
So you don't recall him being there at all?
I don't recall specifically. I never had any conversation with him.
Now, you had made some mention of February 1st, a few days later, at your department, there were members from the crime lab that came, correct?
That is correct.
And what, if anything, did they come there to do?
They were assisting the state police in executing a search warrant on a motor vehicle.
And where was that motor vehicle in relation to your department?
It was in our Sallyport.
If you could just describe to the jury sort of what is a Sallyport, specifically the Cannon Police, like where is it located, what does it look like?
Sure, it's on the rear portion of our police department. They are large overhead doors that are numbered, 1, 2, 3, and 4. We only have two bays, so the Sallyport that the vehicle was in, typically we enter through door 4 and you would exit through door 3. Those doors, overhead doors, can only be controlled by a computer in the dispatch center, and it's where we bring in our prisoners. Once the Sallyport goes up, you enter, close the door, the area is secure. The rest of the PD is only accessible by access card, key access card.
As you mentioned, sort of the overhead garage doors are accessible only by the dispatch area, is that correct?
That is correct, a computer in the dispatch area.
And then as far as entrance from the department, how if at all is that controlled?
There is a, to the right of Sallyport 4, there is a key card access door.
Now, with reference to that Sallyport area, is there, what if any cameras are located in that area?
I know there's cameras in the area. I don't specifically know where they are. I typically don't look for them. I know it is under surveillance, as most of our department is.
And have you reviewed at least portion or the entirety of the Sallyport video from that particular day, February 1st?
I've seen a small portion, yes.
May I approach the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
What's depicted on that particular flash drive?
Yes.
Okay, what is depicted on that, sir?
CPD Sallyport videos.
You know, I'll call what to introduce in a minute as the next exhibit.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor. Your Honor, if I may, at this time, I seek to publish a portion of Exhibit 34 for the jury.
Okay.
May I have one moment, Your Honor?
Yes.
So, Ms.
Gilman, if I could have the portion that's February 1st that covers 12 a.m. to 12 noon.
You've done the 2-1 bottom. Yeah.
Ms. Gilman, if I could ask you to just fast forward that to approximately 9:11 a.m.
Why don't we take our morning recess? Why don't we take a 10-15 minute recess? So we're still in session. So in presenting the exhibits to be marked, please take them out of the plastic and out of the envelopes because the actual item itself gets a sticker on it. That'll just save a little time. We're having all sorts of difficulties. FTI is not working. I'm not sure that we're getting any internet in here. Are we all set with this? Is this something? Do you want to use the flash drive that you put in? Does that help? Or are you?
No, I think the initial issue I think is sort of the size of the video. So bringing it up can be a little. My issue was that as I was standing over there, I couldn't really see anything as far as the screen. It's
dark.
That dark when you put it on.
I couldn't open any of this weekend on my home computer, on my work computer. So, all right, why don't we take a 10-minute recess?
All rise to the court, please.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.